Hello, returning happies and new listeners. This is Steve Bennett Martin.
And this is Stephen Martin Bennett.
And welcome to A Lifetime of Happiness. The podcast where we take you on our journey through some of the movies, TV shows, and other bits of pop culture that are helping to keep us happy, while hopefully bringing a smile to your face along the way.
And today, before you go out into the holiday weekend, going to the beaches and lighting fireworks, we wanted to take a moment to remind you what the 4th of July is really all about.
Aliens!
Yes!
Yes, we're going to be talking about the 1996 movie Independence Day. And you know what I realized when we're doing the show notes?
What's that, honey?
It's episode 74, like 7-4, like 4th of July.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And 74 episodes? My goodness.
Yes, we've been at it a minute, huh?
Just a little bit.
Yes, and speaking of the podcast making us happy, what else has been making us happy, my love?
Well, why don't you go first?
Well, I am celebrating today as the day of recording my 30-day sober anniversary.
Congratulations.
Yes, my first sober birthday of sorts. I've been counting my days up to 30, and that's my first big milestone I've hit, you know, of course, after the one day and the one week.
Yes. And funny enough, that's what's making me happy, too.
Yes. Well, in addition to that, also the Red Bug Slow Preserve.
Slew,
whatever. I don't know. Sarasota was very, it was a pleasant surprise for if you ever are in our area in Sarasota and looking to get a nice little nature walk. It was right in the middle of Sarasota where you wouldn't expect there to be a nature trail.
Yeah, like you walk, you know, 50 feet from the parking lot and all of a sudden the air smells different. Mm-hmm. There's a canopy of trees and you're like, oh yeah, I'm just in the middle of a forest now. And we had our brunch at the breakfast house.
Yes, and we took Grimmy for a walk. So we were able to walk children in nature.
I know, it's like you're walking children in nature.
Yes, and in addition to my sobriety and nature making us happy, we've also been binging some fun things on TV, haven't we?
We sure have.
Yes, and the one that I really enjoyed recently was Panic on Amazon Prime, because when we watched the preview, it sounded like everything we loved. A small town full of teenagers ready to graduate and get into college with all the teen angst with a game that's dangerous for their lives.
Yes, and I thought it was going to go in one direction and it ended up being more about other things. And it was interesting twists and turns. And so if you have Amazon Prime, it's free.
Yes.
Watch it. It's fun. It's called Panic.
Yes. And has there been anything else that you've been watching that's been making you happy, my love?
So I have recently restarted Penny Dreadful.
Okay.
That used to be on Showtime.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that we watched a couple seasons.
We watched one season.
Oh.
And there were three. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back and finish it because I remembered enjoying it. And we're now to the part of summer where there's nothing on, really.
Not until we get to Big Brother.
Woo-hoo! And so I figured, you know what? Let me go back and go through my wish list of things that we had started and never finished that I wanted to get back to. So Penny Dreadful it is. It's a really interesting cast. It blends vampires, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dorian Gray, like all
the supernatural stuff you love. And it's also in like old timey England.
It is, which, you know, I love as well. So
exactly. Yes. And you know what else I know that you love very much?
What is that?
Disaster movies.
Oh my gosh. I do so much.
Exactly. And so you've been very patient in waiting for us to cover this movie, but with it being holiday themed, it also is perfect to wait for this to launch. So let's get into Independence Day.
Woohoo.
For those of you who don't know, Independence Day is a 1996 American sci-fi directed and co-written by Roland Emmerich. What do we know him from, babe?
So he also did The Day After Tomorrow, which is fantastic, and he did 2012, back when everybody knew that the Mayan calendars ended at 2012, and everyone was sure that we were all going to die on a certain day in 2012.
Yes, and we did not, but it was a good movie. I do remember that.
Yeah.
And I love supporting him, not only because he feeds your fuel for disaster,
yes,
but he also is a very big advocate for the LGBT community because he is openly very loud and proudly gay himself.
I did not know that.
Yes. Meanwhile, his co-writer and producer, Dean Devlin, partnered with him here, as well as when they worked on Godzilla together, as well as this movie's sequel in 2015. So it's a creative team. He often brings in Dean Devlin to help him with a lot of his projects.
So I'm not as familiar with a lot of the Godzilla lore.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, Godzilla was always the villain And so the 1998 Godzilla kind of fit in with how I saw Godzilla. And now these days they have the whole MonsterVerse movies where Godzilla and King Kong really aren't the bad guys. Yeah. So that's a whole different thing, but I got sidetracked. Anyway, the cast in this is amazing.
Yes, I know one of them. Jeff Goldblum was in Jurassic Park, and I also know Will Smith was from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yes, and Bill Pullman from my favorite Mel Brooks movie, Spaceballs, Mary McDonnell, who was recently on Rebel, but she has a long and illustrious movie career.
I noticed her mostly from Rebel, but that's because it was the most recent thing.
Yes.
There was also Judd Hirsch, who I know is in Taxi, which is an old classic I've never seen.
Yes. Margaret Cullen, who I originally saw on As the World Turns, and then we saw her as Blair's mom on Gossip Girl.
Ah, and Randy Quaid was in there as well. Is he one of the Quaid brothers?
He's also the one that went crazy and isn't allowed back in the U.S. right now, is hiding out in Canada.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
And then you have Robert Loggia.
Loggia from Big. James Reborn from The Talented Mr. Ripley, who James Reborn is also from Guiding Light. Oh. And he played a lot of villains in the 90s because that's how he got written off of Guiding Light, was for
being a villain,
raping and abusing his wife and stepdaughter. And unfortunately, Bradley Raines was also an alcoholic. And
so, I was going to say, so he was a gray area character.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Oh. Like, I love my gray area villains. Bradley Raines was a very bad man.
Yes. And it also had Harvey Fierstein, who I remember being so shocked when he came out.
Yeah, from Mrs. Doubtfire, and also won the Tony for Hairspray on Broadway.
Yes. So I remember even being young, not really knowing what gay was, I saw him and I was like, he's like me.
It's an amazing, amazing cast. Like, these are very talented people. And it's a great movie. It released on July 3rd, and I actually saw it opening night with my cousins in Columbus, Ohio.
I believe that.
And it was fantastic. And it's a 20th Century Fox movie, had a $75 million budget, and it made $817.4 million.
That's a little success story.
Just a little bit. I mean, it was everywhere. I have probably, unless I gave it away, there's something possibly still in storage. The big alien, you know, where the head opens up.
Mm-hmm.
I had it. It stood over a foot tall, and it had, you could turn it on and had a motion detector where the face would open up and go.
Oh, cool.
I used to set it up and turn on the motion detector and wait for mom to go by.
I'm sure she loved that.
She did.
Yes. And the IMDb summary of the movie is, the aliens are coming and their goal is to invade and destroy Earth. Fighting superior technology, mankind's best weapon is the will to survive. How does that stack up?
It's actually not bad when you think about it, because this movie has so much going on. It's hard to get into two sentences, but in the grand scheme of things, the main thing that we are fighting for is our right to live. So yes. I kind of approve of that.
Yeah. Now, with this all-star cast, do you have any favorite characters in the movie that you'd like to talk about?
So many, but like, we'll go through them a little bit. This is one of the ones where Will Smith solidified himself as a movie star, because before Fresh Prince, he hadn't done any acting really. And then he started with Fresh Prince, and then he got this, and then there was Bad Boys, and then
the one with the dog.
That's later on. I was going to say Men in Black.
Yes, but yeah, it definitely is the first thing that kind of switched him from TV star to movie star.
Yep, and he plays Captain Stephen Hiller, and he's in a relationship with Vivica Fox, who plays Jasmine. He wants to fly for NASA, and she's a stripper.
Yes.
So that actually can go against him, because they want their NASA people to be squeaky clean.
Yes, and one thing I like is when Mary McDonald, the first lady, was talking with Jasmine, and she made the comment about, you know, oh, I'm sorry. And she's like, no, I make good money, and I care for my kid. Like, I'm not sorry about what I do. And
he's
I really like
it.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I really like that in her character.
I do, too. And she has a kid, Dylan, who, if you watch the later seasons of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, plays Will's new toddler nephew. Cousin.
Yeah, you mean like at the fifth or sixth season of every show where they need to add in a kid?
That would be it.
Here's looking at you, Dawn from Buffy.
So it also has Jeff Goldblum as David Levinson, Margaret Cullen as his estranged wife or ex-wife, Connie. I can never remember what it is. I like to pretend they're still married because they never went through with the divorce.
Yes.
And his father, Judd Hirsch, plays Julius Levinson. And so Jeff Goldblum, extremely intelligent, MIT grad, and he works for a cable company.
Yeah.
His dad likes to say that he's a cable repairman. He's a little bit more than that. Mm-hmm. He runs all the technology, making sure that all the stations stay on the air. Margaret Cullen, as Connie, is the communications director for the President of the United States.
Yes, she's a very important lady.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things that his dad, Julius, does in the movie is he's talking to Connie later, and he says, you know, when they were coming, and we knew that there was something, and there was going to be trouble, all he could think about was you. He had to get to you. You know, there's still love there. She goes, love was never our problem. He says, all you need is love. John Lennon, shot in the back. Very sad.
Yes.
And I think that, like, his line delivery is so, so, so good. Judd Hirsch is amazing. He was actually playing much older than he was in real life. And that is very, very good. And another big character, Bill Pullman, playing President Whitmore, and Mary McDonald is his first lady. They have an incredible bond together, and she can always tell when he's lying.
Do you know what that's like, my love?
I do, because I have that ability with you.
Well, it's very hard because I'm a really, really good liar, right?
No, you are really bad, and you have a vein in the middle of your forehead that will pop out when you're fibbing.
Yes, it's my tell, but just like with the president, you know, his person is one of the few people who can realize and see through that.
And it's so cute when he does, because they'll be talking, and he'll say something, and she'll go, liar.
Yeah.
And just the way that they do it, their daughter is a very young Mae Whitman, who people might know from
Arrested Development.
And then she was also in Parenthood, the TV show. And
she was such a cute little girl. She grew up to be a very, like,
she's an excellent actress. And she's very pretty.
Yes.
And I think it was very shitty for them to recast her whenever her character came back for the sequel.
Yes, because they say it was because she wasn't attractive enough? And I'm like, she's a beautiful, talented actress.
She's a beautiful, talented actress. And that was kind of what was insinuated. Now, the other last main character is Randy Quaid playing Russell Case.
Yes, and he shows up as the alcoholic crop duster who claims he was abducted by aliens. There's a lot of probing jokes around, and his kids are just so embarrassed by his dad.
Yep, and they live in an RV, mm-hmm. and the kids are pretty much raising themselves, and one of them is sick and on medication. The older brother is always just, he's the parent mm-hmm. in the family. And those are the people that you really need to know.
Yes, exactly. And one thing I liked, I mean, while we're still talking about Randy Quaid's character, is I know, like, as we go through the movie, his is one of the many different redemption arcs that we see, because as he goes through the training and as he goes into fight and fly, he ends up being one of the main heroes that saves the day, and it really kind of helps redeem him. He makes the joke as he's flying. He's like, he picked a hell of a day to get sober.
Yes.
And I can understand that, because I picked, like, a week before going to New York for a wedding to get sober. So
you sure did.
Sometimes you can't really pick when the right time to get sober is.
Nope. And one of the things that I really enjoy about this, and it is true for good disaster movies, mm-hmm. you have to care about the characters.
Yes.
It's the same with horror movies, because if they're going to be killing off the cast,
you have to care about the cast.
You have to care that something is happening. And
it
they
can't be like Rob Zombie's Halloween, where everyone's a nasty twat, so you don't really care who lives or dies.
Exactly. And that is always the example I use. Nobody in Rob Zombie's Halloween was worthy of caring about. So when they died, I just... You don't care.
I know. But that was the red flag I was waving in front of you to get you to go off. Yes.
But so this one, they do a really good job with the script and with these actors that you're like, I like these people. So you don't want bad things to happen to them. But it is a disaster movie. Bad things are going to happen. It starts on July 2nd.
Yes, it does. And it starts off with cable signals getting messed up, which would cause us to be very upset back in the day.
Yeah, because back in the day, you might be too young for this, when there were solar flares, uh-huh. And it usually happened around August, that your TV would have these, like, brown dots and, like, wobbly things, and there was nothing you could do about it until cable became advanced.
Yeah.
But I remember whenever it was solar flare time, it was almost like you just had a radio program.
Yes, and speaking of solar flares, before you know it, the sky is on fire as the alien ships enter our orbit, and I don't know what's worse, that or missing cable.
Could you imagine how terrifying that would be?
If the sky's on fucking fire?
Yeah, well, yeah. And then, like, say you're driving along, and they haven't figured out what it is yet, and all of a sudden, the fire clears, and you see this giant ship clear the horizon.
Yeah.
Like, they show all these accidents as it happens, and I think that's exactly what it would be. Like, you and I would be getting ready for, like, Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
We would have been getting ready for work as it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I can see just if that was happening, there would be a couple crashes on the highway.
Oh, and Sarasota traffic is already bad enough. Harvey Fierstein plays he's a fun, campy character in this. He is David's boss at the cable company, and at first he's more concerned about making sure the signal gets cleared. David, we need to get these things so the people can see, David. And David realizes something, though, that there's a code in the signal, and he figures it out that it's a countdown.
And it's a countdown to something bad.
Yeah, and he finally figures it out as all of these ships are moving into place.
Yeah,
and it's a countdown that he figures out before anybody else.
And
that
he was able and he heads to DC just in time to save his estranged wife and warn the president.
Right, because the president sends out the welcome wagon helicopter with the lights to try to do
we're friends. Hey, aliens, thank you for visiting us.
Well, I blame Steven Spielberg and Close Encounters because they had a whole thing with light and sound whenever the aliens showed up on that mountain.
Yeah.
That they were like, oh, we'll talk to the aliens this way. So we all grew up with that. So, of course, you send out the welcome wagon with lights and things to say, you know, welcome. We hope you come in peace. Boom. The thing opens up. Welcome wagon explodes.
Yes, it certainly does. Harvey Fierstein gets trapped in his car and he's like, oh, crap.
Oh, crap.
Yes.
The destruction of the major cities, it starts with the one over the Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what disaster movies are for. You're waiting for the big explosions. And this one, they give it to you in the beginning, because not only is it a disaster movie, it's a great character study. So it doesn't have to rely just on the threat of destruction later.
Yeah, it's they also give the journey.
And so that the Empire State Building blows up, the large building in L.A., that Jasmine's stripper friend is up there like, welcome, aliens, make yourself at home.
Yeah.
She goes out big. She was from Saved by the Bell, the new class.
I believe it. I also know her from other things. She has a very distinctive voice.
Yes, she does. And David had convinced everyone, and they get on a helicopter to head to Air Force One. As Air Force One is starting to take off, the White House explodes because that's where the aliens were over, not the Capitol, not the Washington Monument. They were over the White House. It explodes. The First Lady had been in L.A. giving a speech. She didn't get out in time. Her helicopter goes down. Something that we're all concerned about, though, is that Jasmine is supposed to be with her son and their dog, Boomer, in L.A.
And I was so concerned about Boomer during that accident, when they were in that little underhang and the fire was coming.
Oh, and like she's looking, she sees all these people running past them and she looks in the rearview mirror and then she sees fire.
Yeah.
And she gets out and she grabs the kid and puts him on her hip and she's running with Dylan. And then she's like, all these people keep running down one of the tunnels in L.A. And she sees this door and she's like, Boomer! Boomer! And finally the dog starts going and it's jumping from car to car and the fire's coming closer and it's coming closer and she gets inside of this maintenance shed in the tunnel and Boomer! And just as the fire's coming,
Boomer's okay. The dog does not die, so do not worry about that.
Like, I've seen it so many times, it still gives me anxiety during that scene.
Yes, and I mean, the fact that, like, all of this shit goes down, and it just ends, and you realize that it's only July 2nd.
Yeah, and then
and
the
now it's
says,
July 3rd.
Yeah.
And that, you're like, oh, that was just the first day.
That was day
And it's called Independence Day. So July 3rd doesn't end up really working out much better for Captain Steven, because he sent up with his buddy Harry Connick Jr.
Yep, and they are kind of like the Maverick and Goose, because they're in, is he's a Marine pilot.
Pew, pew, pew.
Yep. And so they're going up, and Harry Connick Jr. is your comic relief. And
until he dies.
Yep. Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy. And they're up there, and because the welcome wagon has gone down, all the cities have been destroyed. So they're like, we are going to attack. And they get up there, and they're pew, pew, like you said. And what do they find out, darling?
They find out that
the ship has shields.
Yes, the ship has shields, but they're able to, well, before they end up winning, one of them does not make it out alive. He truly is the Goose. He's the funny BFF who dies.
Yep, and like, just like in Top Gun, and Goose gets killed off, Harry Connick Jr. gets killed off here, and
but Steve manages to crash the alien ship. He does win in the end.
Everyone else in his team dies. He makes it away.
I was going to say, and what I did find interesting about it is for such a great movie and that really handles a lot of the emotional impact, like I don't remember him really bringing up his, you know, his buddy who died or like all the people in his squadron. He very much was like more like, yeah, I beat the alien. He wasn't really mournful. And that's okay, because there's a lot of mourning going on in the movie.
Yeah. And I think if there had been a longer timetable, he would have gotten the chance to mourn. Like, Top Gun gave Maverick and Meg Ryan a chance to be sad that he died. But this, you have 72 hours to do the whole thing.
Exactly. And he goes right into getting the alien and carting its ass back to the...
He's trying to head back to El Toro, but he realizes how far away he is. And that's when Russell Case and his caravan of idiots in their RVs comes by, and he hops a ride in a truck, and they put the alien in there. And Will was like, yeah, there's an Air Force base near here. I flew over it. And Russell Case is like, it's not on the map. And he goes, well, I know what's there. Do you know what Air Force base that ended up being?
It ended up being Area 51, which, as we learned from the president, couldn't be real.
No. And he's like, and Julius, David's father, was like, what about that area? Area 51. And they're like, sir, no matter what you might have read in the National Enquirer, it's not real. And James Reborn, the guy, evil guy from Guiding Light, that's the chief of staff, is like, that's not exactly true, Mr. President. Two words, plausible deniability. And they've had the ship there since the 50s.
Yes, but it's only in the past few days with everything going on with these aliens that things really start going on in the lab, and it ends up with an autopsy that does not go very well.
No, and while all this is going on, Jasmine's driving around to L.A., and she comes across the First Lady, like you mentioned, and they have that wonderful conversation with, what do you do? I'm a dancer. Ballet. Exotic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, I really like that, but then it is sad when she dies.
Yeah, but we're not there just yet, because Steve isn't, like, they were like, El Toro's been destroyed, and that's where Jasmine was supposed to be. And he's like, I don't want to believe that she's gone. Like, in his heart, he knows that he would be there. So he hijacks a helicopter and flies there. And he and Jasmine have this great reunion, and they pick up the First Lady and take her to Area 51. But as you said,
that's where she dies.
It's too late, and she does. But she gets to see the president and her daughter. And one of my favorite scenes that still makes me tear up is when they're talking, and he goes, "The doctors say you're gonna be just fine," and she says, "Liar," and then she dies.
Yeah. I know, it gets you every time.
It does, because, I mean, they knew each other's soul, and, like, even when he's trying to make her feel better, she knew that that wasn't the truth, and...
It's quite the way to wrap up that second act.
And that is how we ended July 3rd. July 4th starts off slightly more hopeful, though.
Yes, David finds out that you can give the ships a computer virus that will take out their shields.
Yeah, and... he got that idea from his dad, because Julius is like, you can't be sitting around on the cold concrete. You'll get a cold. And he's like, cold. And so he decides he can do that. And everything starts coming together, because all of our heroes are now at Area 51. Everyone's together.
They have a plan. And
they have a plan now. But in between the plan, love.
Yes, love, love, all you need is love. And Steve and Jasmine get married.
They do.
And through watching the wedding, David and Connie get a chance to reconnect.
Because she sees that he's still wearing his wedding band, and she reaches over and they hold hands during the wedding ceremony, because they're the
witnesses.
Thank you. And so they can't really use any technology to talk to anybody around the globe. What do they decide to do?
Well, they decide to use Morse code.
Yes. So it's all with the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And this is where the most memorable thing from the movie happens. Play that.
In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July. And you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
That speech gets me in the feels every single time.
Yes, it does. I know that was one of the things that you always are like, I love the movie because of the president's speech.
Oh, I mean, that's just, like, there are certain things in movies that are just so well written and so well delivered, and that is one of them. Like, on the 4th of July, that's what I always, like, picture in my head. Mm-hmm. Now
it's time to kick some ass.
It is. So they're going to send David and Steve into space, and their plan is to send them up there with a nuke, and they'll upload the virus.
Take down the shields.
Yep, which will take down the shields, and they will put the nuke into the main ship and hopefully destroy the mothership. But while the shields are down, thanks to the coordinated Morse code effort that they can possibly bring down worldwide everything.
Everyone works together with the entire world to fight the aliens.
That's the plan. But whenever David and Steve get up there and they put in the virus, all of a sudden their ship is stuck. But then it transfers back down and the shields do come down. And then you've got all of our airplanes up there shooting, but they're not doing enough damage. The president's even up there.
Yeah.
And
how that happened, I don't know.
Yeah, how they let him do that. And I guess it's because all the other pilots at El Toro had been destroyed.
Yeah, but can you imagine a president that would do that?
No. No, that's just not what they would do. And everybody's out of missiles. They haven't done enough damage. And they're... The thing's about ready to fire its primary weapon. The primary weapon is what took out all the cities.
Yep.
And it is now centered over Area 51. And one of the pilots that had been up there was, as you mentioned, on his worst day to go sober.
Yes.
It was Randy Quaid, Russell Case.
Yes. And so he decides, though, he sacrifices himself to save the day. He says, "Tell my kids I love them very much."
And that is really emotional because his oldest son is down there and he hears it and he sends his ship directly up into there and taking out the primary weapon, the whole giant big ship explodes.
Yes.
Now we go back into space and David and Steve are stuck and they realize that they're not getting out. And so they're just going to release the nuke. Sacrifice themselves, but take out the mothership because they saw that they're prepping for an invasion.
Yes. Yeah, because as you might have been able to tell by now, and hopefully you've watched it, because if not, we just spoiled the hell out of it. They were just really after us. They were not here to make love and peace. They were here to make war, to kill us all, and then drain us of our natural resources.
That's exactly right.
So it's very good that we ended up winning, because I don't think we would have really... met eye to eye ultimately.
No, and they wouldn't have needed us for slaves or anything like that. There would have been, I don't think there would have been any humans. It would have been total eradication of our species. But when they sent the nuke in, all of a sudden it released their ship, and there's a great, unbelievable scene. But at that moment, it's the suspension of disbelief, and they make it out, and they barely escape. And they crash, and then they crash safely.
Yes, they safely crash. It's more of just a bumpy landing.
Yep. And then it's happy endings for everyone.
That's still alive.
That's still alive. So you have the president and his daughter, David, his father, and Connie, and Steve, and Jasmine, and Dylan. And it's really, really good. And... it's enjoyable. It's a great popcorn movie.
Yes, it certainly is. It's and it being a holiday themed, it's perfect to watch every year.
Oh yeah. And it's one of those that surprisingly 15 years later has aged pretty well.
Yeah, and speaking of aging, also did have a sequel, which we do have to acknowledge at the very least.
Yeah.
It came out in 2016 with much of the same creative team and cast. However, it did not seem to capture the same je ne sais quoi that this one did, because with its budget of $165 million, its box office was $389.7 million. So, I mean, I would take those extra millions, but it's not enough to be considered the success it was hoping compared to that first one.
I didn't go see it in the theater. I actually rented it.
Yes. Well, I mean, it works out well because, I mean, when it first came out, Emmerich announced that this was part of his plan to end, you know, a 3-part, 6-movie franchise, claiming he already had Independence Day 3 and 4 all planned out. But after the lack of success from this, as well as just without the backing of his co-writer, Devlin, who claimed to have no knowledge of the product, it does seem that it was not going to be likely to begin with. And then there was a final nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
And that was 20th Century Fox being acquired by Disney. So now, while we never say never, it is a lot less likely that we'll be having a Independence Day franchise.
Yeah, especially like Bill Pullman is dead in real life now. They killed off Will Smith's character in the movie.
As punishment for not coming back, right?
Yep. I guess he didn't like the script and said, you know, I'm not coming back. And it's one of those things, once you get rid of the people that really drew you in, and it's not their fault that Bill Pullman is dead.
Yes.
But it is just one of those things that it didn't have the same magic at all. It did not.
Because this movie was so big that it made a huge impact on disaster movies. I mean, I know that you're a huge fan of disaster movies. My memory is crap. So yeah. when researching it, though, they said that this was a brand new bar for disaster movies, that while there were disaster movies beforehand, Twister and
Twister was a great one.
Yeah. But that this is the first one that set a new standard for CGI effects.
100%.
And so, yes. What was the method out of seeing it in the theater?
It was to see all those cities destroyed, especially the New York scene is the one they spend the most time on. Mm-hmm. That was just so severely impressive. If they ever do because for an anniversary of Jurassic Park, they re-released it, updating some of the effects a little bit.
Yeah.
So if they ever did that with this, which I mean, this is the 15th year anniversary, this would have been a good one to do it. I would, or even if it did one of those go see the classics in the theaters type of thing, I would see it again on the big screen because just some of those scenes are severely impressive to see. And this led to us having great movies like Volcano.
Deep Impact,
which is one of, so the same year, there were two Asteroids Headed Towards Earth movies.
Yeah, Armageddon.
And Deep Impact.
Yes.
And Armageddon was the more popcorn flick. Deep Impact was the emotional character study.
Yes.
And I prefer Deep Impact.
Yes. And it also came out around the same time then right afterwards of Dante's Peak, which I remember with all the lava being really cool. Not to be confused with Dante's Cove, the softcore gay porn supernatural thriller.
Exactly. And Volcano and Dante's Peak came out around the same time. Dante's Peak had Pierce Brosnan.
Yes.
And that was in Washington State, I believe, and Volcano took place in L.A., and that was a volcano erupted in the middle of L.A. near the La Brea Tar Pits.
Yeah.
Also, just a super, super enjoyable movie.
Yeah, I mean, what are some of your favorites of the disaster movies? I know we would just touch on a bunch, but what's your favorite disaster movie of all time?
Oh, goodness. Favorite disaster movie of all time. I think it would be between Volcano, Deep Impact, Dante's Peak, and The Day After Tomorrow.
Well, it looks like we narrowed it down and was able to talk about them all. Now, getting back to this movie, a big theme of this movie, in addition to it being a disaster movie, it also is that aliens are real and they're out there. And a lot of times in movies, they handle aliens very differently. Mm-hmm. Do you think that aliens are real, my love?
I do. I don't see them like this. I see them somewhat more along the lines of some of our comic book aliens, that they are more advanced races.
Yes.
And they're just ignoring us because we're a backwater to them.
Yeah. And that's exactly how I see it. And I don't know whether I'm forming that from, all the comics and everything that we read together. But I'm just sure that if there are aliens out there, that they're just watching us like we're one of their Mojoverse TV channels of look at the funny monkeys.
Yeah. I mean, we are the Duck Dynasty of the whole universe for them, where they're really? Did you see what those people did again?
I was going to say, did you see who they elected for president a couple years ago?
Yeah, I totally see the other aliens. They have warp drives and better medicines or healing things.
Yes.
And probably closer to utopian societies.
Yeah, hopefully. So, yes, if that happens in our lifetime, I'd be really psyched. I don't think I'd be out there like the stripper's friend being like, take me, welcome, welcome. But I would be watching it being what the hell's going on? This would be really cool.
I think I've seen too many alien attack movies to be right off the gate being
trusting.
Oh, yeah, trusting. Thank you. Now, what would you say are some of your favorite parts in the movie?
I would say that, I mean, of course, the action is something that, especially when I was watching it very young, I was like, the one thing to get me to pay attention to movies was shit blowing up. So, I mean, I love that, but I also just love the Area 51 scene, mm-hmm. just because, I mean, everyone knew about Area 51 growing up, so being able to see what it would be like and having, like, the alien come alive with the thing coming out from the inside and then taking over the scientist guy, I mean, it was all just so fucking cool, especially as a kid. I just remember watching it being like, I love that scene.
Yeah, that one. And I remember coming back from seeing this and thinking that was one of the scariest things I had ever seen on a film.
Yeah.
And then the president's wife dying, thinking that's one of the saddest things I'd seen. Mm-hmm. So,
and one of the most inspiring things. What's your favorite part?
It has to be the president's speech. As much as I love all of the destruction, the thing that stuck with me the most is the president's speech, where he rallies everyone before going up to take them on. And I just love it. Like, I think it's good.
Yes. So this year, while you are all being forced to stay up late because all your neighbors are putting off fireworks way too late.
I mean, come on, people.
Yes.
And, you can just stay up for one day.
Yeah. So just stay up and watch the movie instead.
And like we've told you our favorite parts, we would love to hear your favorite parts.
Yeah. Email us at happylifepod@gmail.com.
You can find us on all the socials at Happy Life Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yes. And
until next time, everybody.
Boom!
No, not boom.
Okay, stay happy. You're still here, which is great, because there's something we probably forgot to mention this episode.
That is correct. Each episode, as we're discussing movies, music, and games, there's a good chance we've used a small clip or two from the original source material.
Yes, and those clips are not ours. We do not own the rights to any of the music or clips. They were used to help solicit a discussion to appreciate the original source material.
And with that, if you are still listening, you likely really appreciate our material as well.
I mean, how could you not? And if you've enjoyed this episode, then you should also ask yourself, when's the last time I told a friend to check out A Lifetime of Happiness?
If your answer was not today, well, it should be.
Yes, so go tell your best girlfriend about our podcast today, and don't forget to subscribe or follow us wherever you're listening to get new episodes each Wednesday.
Stay happy.